web at www.kpfk.org. That's kpfk.org.
Keeping the flame alive, the voice of the prisoner. This year's theme for Families to Amend, California's Three Strikes, 7th Annual Awards Dinner, to be held on Thursday, April 7th, 2005, at the Proud Bird Restaurant, 11022 Aviation Boulevard. Reception 6 p.m., dinner 7 p.m. Awardees, Drug Policy Alliance, Peter Camejo, Sergeant Ron Cato, Barbara Osborne, Javier Starring. Come and hear the voice of the prisoner. For more information, call 213-746-4844.
Junior high, she started working overtime, scrubbing floors or working on assembly lines just so she could help her mother out. And
welcome to the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world on kpfk.org. My name is Manuel Criollo, and I'm here with my co-host Eric Mann. On today's show, we'll dedicate most of our hour to the state of the AFL-CIO. The upcoming AFL-CIO internal elections have created an important moment of reflection inside the labor movement. The crisis in union membership throughout the country and the declining influence of the AFL-CIO is leading to important debates of where the institution should be heading. So first, we'll have Jerry Tucker, a longtime U.S. union activist and former executive board member of the United Auto Workers. He was a founder of the UAW New Directions Movement, and he'll be talking to us about his recent dispatch on CNET. And following Jerry, to continue the conversation on the union movement, we will have David Bacon, a freelance journalist and photographer whose writing regularly appears in many publications such as Z Magazine, In These Times, and The Progressive. And we'll end the last 15 minutes of the show preparing our listening audience for the first of 8 Los Angeles mayoral runoff debates between Antonio Villaraigosa and the incumbent, James Hahn. What's at stake for progressives in this election? Will the candidates feel pressure to move to the right? What are the candidates promising the black community as they become a key to assure a victory to reach City Hall? This and more, so stay tuned. We'll be back with Voices from the Front Lines.
Hey everybody, welcome to KPFK 90.7 FM. This is your voice, the DJ voice, Eric Mann. And we have a really good show today. We have two very important commentators on the moribund labor movement. They're both going to see if they can levitate a corpse, which is going to be very hard to do on the radio. First is Jerry Tucker. Formerly from the New Directions Movement in St. Louis. You with us, Jerry? Are you with us, Jerry?
Yes, Eric, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Jerry. I know Jerry Tucker for, lots of years, 1982 probably, and I just want to give you a little background because he wrote a commentary called U.S. Labor in Crisis, which shares a lot of my views. And I just want to say a little bit about Jerry Tucker and how I met him. I was a worker at the General Motors Van Nuys plant and the coordinator of the campaign to keep GM Van Nuys open. And I had gone since 1979 to UAW conventions that could have been morticians conventions because they basically didn't let the members speak. It was a big alcohol and freebie kind of, bribe delegates from the convention. By 5 o'clock, you were having parties from every workers' comp lawyer and everybody trying to sell stuff to the union. The union was in grave crisis by 1979, and yet the big song they always sang was Happy Days Are Here Again, which we'd all march around in a circle and do. Left-wing people from who had built the UAW were kept out of the UAW convention, and Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors representatives were let in. So I went year after year hoping, you know, dreaming of this insurgency. And I'm trying to remember what year was it, 86, Jerry? When was the first year of the...
86 was the election years, Eric.
Right. So 86 was the first time I think I really met you. When we hear this rumble that there's this movement coming out of the Midwest and the South called the New Directions Movement that's actually going to challenge the UAW's jointness, which is in bed with the the big three automakers. But what was exciting about it was this was a movement. It was like what you would dream of sometime, and I'm a pretty cynical person, but I mean, it was very multiracial. It was very white, black, and Latino. The lead person who was running for president, running for regional director, I should say, was Jerry Tucker, who's on the phone today. They had signs that said, "Justice, not just us." And we're trying to talk about way beyond the normal UAW militancy, which had preceded them, which was like workers for a better contract. This was really union for a better world. And to everybody's amazement, Jerry Tucker won that election for regional director, which would have meant the first member of the executive board on the UAW from the left since, since the 1930s, I would imagine, or 40s. And then, just like everybody couldn't imagine, the UAW stole the election and said that Jerry had not won the election, that there had been election irregularities. So then, and Jerry, you can correct any part that's slightly off, Jerry had to spend about 2 years of his life in a court case. And what was amazing about it is hold his movement together while he was suing the UAW for fraudulent election practices. And somewhere around 88, they overthrew the UAW election, and Jerry was allowed to have a re-election. And I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I went out there, and it was just one of the most moving experiences of my life when Jerry had a second chance. But you have to understand, for 2 years, the UAW was hammering at him while he was running this campaign out of his house. And the UAW incumbent director was, when he wasn't sleeping, was operating out of the office, running a red-baiting campaign against Jerry. And Jerry had built this movement in Texas and, I believe, Louisiana and in Missouri and an 8-state region. And I was there when Jerry won. And it was, for those of you who haven't seen history in the making, when Owen Bieber, the then president of the UAW, had to shake Jerry's hands. I don't know if it was worse than, Reagan shaking Brezhnev's hand or something. You know, it was like he could barely do it. But then Jerry was placed in a very difficult situation, which was no sooner had he won that he had to run for re-election, because he didn't have 3 years to build up his bureaucracy, in the bad word, his machine, in the good word. He didn't have time to go out and meet all the people and deliver the services, but rather UAW virtually subverted his ability to run as regional director, withdrawing and withholding services from people. And then through an all-court press where they had, excuse me, Jerry, they had 2 full years to run against him before he was regional director, and through a red baiting and black baiting and every other baiting campaign, Jerry was not reelected in the second term. And then he went out and formed this insurgent movement, then New Directions movement, which lasted about, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 years before it began to decline. So my first question, Jerry, is you're talking, the main subject today is going to be about how much hope do we really see in the fight between Andy Stern and John Sweeney. You've raised very serious questions about it in your Znet magazine. article about the limits of the insurgency coming from Andy Stern. But before then, tell us a little bit about what it was like trying to run the New Directions movement as an insurgency around the politics that you believe in, and why eventually New Directions, I think it's fair to say, was defeated by the UAW International. What did you achieve, and what did you learn out of that experience?
All right. Well, thanks, Eric. Look, I would really rather spend most of my time talking about the current debate, but let me recap a little bit about that experience going in. It's absolutely true it was a full-court press, and that's a good way to describe it. The UAW, by the time of our insurgency, and it was a significant movement not only in our region but throughout the country, and thanks to you and Pete and Mark and many people from the West Coast that joined in as well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we had to keep in mind where our opposition was coming from. It simply wasn't just the UAW leadership, even though it had become a one-party state, as described by its own public review board. But it was the corporations, the major corporations that it worked with. The whole agenda of jointness, or jointism as they call it in Europe, had really taken hold. By 1984, the UAW was signing contracts which said it was the purpose of that agreement to ensure the competitiveness of the company. So with that kind of broad support behind them from their corporate collaborator, it made it that much more difficult, and the jointness agenda held out an awfully sweet seduction for a lot of workers during that period. Now, as we moved into the 1990s, the continued promises of the UAW, that one very specific union, that this new collaboration, this new jointness was going to protect workers' jobs, began to crumple. It did, in fact, for a period of time, protect incomes, but jobs were first casualties, as the Van Nuys plant and all the plants on the West Coast could be witness to. So, you know, there was such hegemony on that side of the question that it was very hard to see a movement, even a good movement, a very spirited movement, lasting within that particular organization. However, I'd like to segue into the larger questions of the whole labor movement.
Sure.
At the time, the UAW was widely respected as one of the primary innovators of at least contract bargaining innovation. And over the years, many of the things that the UAW had negotiated became standards for other unions to seek. Well, not only the UAW's collapse in that area, which is now seeing health care co-pays come across the bargaining table, something unusual in the UAW particularly. But you see all throughout the labor movement an absolute desire to avoid conflict, a determination to not fight aggressively, pull back, leave workers hanging. Instance after instance. I mean, they go all the way back to the PATCO workers. It should have been a national something go on in this country when the PATCO workers were fired by Ronald Reagan, but the labor movement sat on its hands and did so on a continuing basis from that point forward. I mean, I worked with the Staley workers in central Illinois in the 90s, as well as the Caterpillar workers and the rubber workers there. And labor movement had every opportunity to step in and use what might it still had at that point, and I think clearly could have helped secure a victory for some of those workers, but failed to do that. And I think that it's a cultural question. So I want to really touch on the fact that we hear an argument going on today framed around the question of structure, more around that, and in a secondary or lesser degree around the allocation of dues dollars and resources between the Labor Center, the AFL-CIO, and the various affiliated unions. But in reality, I can't see that the problems of the labor movement and the low number of workers that are represented today, the 8% in the private sector, the overall 12% they claim within today's labor movement, is just a result of a misallocation of resources and a structure question. This is a question of vision. We have a labor movement that for many, many years has avoided the idea of confrontation with corporate capital. It fails to consistently identify the nexus between capital and government in this country and its consolidating the power and driving workers down. I also think, and I've tried to say this as often as I can, as have you, Eric, and I certainly appreciate that. A real social movement is really the answer here. It's not about the labor movement as we know it. It's not about those static little status quo defending unions as we know them. It's about the working class in this country, and what will it take? Where will be the series of educational activities? Will it be around struggles and conflicts, which of course have great tendency to our potential for education? Will it be something equally systemic at the rank and file level? But it isn't going to come from, and no disrespect to the Stearns or the Cohens or any of those folks, but in reality, you know, as I've said, they're just rearranging deck chairs on a sinking ship. And
well, let's go into that a minute, because the reality is that I've read your excellent article, and I've read David Bacon's, and surprisingly or not surprisingly, they're calling for a fairly similar politics. I mean, they call for the re-beginning of a left. They call for, as you did, widening the struggle against racism, against imperialism, against the war in Iraq, taking on the Democratic Party. They talk about changing the AFL into a social movement. They go back to when the AFL was a social movement. But those of us who work with the AFL know that it's not going to become a social movement in the next 2 or 3 years.
I'm not holding out hope that it will either.
Right.
Not been my proposal. Maybe David sees it a little differently than I do.
Wait, Jerry, let me get to where my question's going. So what I'm trying to say is, in the moment, we do need to look at this election both by what it's not going to be and what it might be. So, for instance, I don't even understand the fight well enough, you know, and I don't think a lot of our readers do, so listeners do. So when is the AFL-CIO presidency up for grabs? When is the date?
This summer at their convention, and that will be held, I believe, in July, probably in Washington.
Okay. Is John Wilhelm from Unite HERE, he's still hinting, is he going to run?
Well, I have no idea, actually, whether that's going to be a fact, whether there is going to be an actual conflict there, or whether this is more foreplay toward pushing for different agendas. I mean, it may be one of those optional questions that people will look at when they see where their votes lay. They haven't been through a lot of union political questions. There's brave talk, and then all of a sudden people don't see the votes, and sometimes the brave talk disappears. So I don't know whether there's going to be an actual election or not. And I think, quite frankly, the debate, which was pretty swollen and bouncing around pretty good prior to the executive council meeting that was held just a few weeks ago. But now after that meeting, where there were some straw votes, what they used to call straw votes in our union, were taken about certain questions, particularly the restructuring questions that Andy Stern had posed and some of the dues reallocation questions. As I understand, the Sweeney side prevailed on those votes, but I don't think that necessarily decides the question. But the debate hasn't got the intensity today that it did have. Now, that may just be that the various factions are regrouping here. Part of the point I continue to make, though, is that this is a ministerial debate. This is a narrow debate. This does not involve the larger cross-section of social movements. It still is just discussing the question of density and restructuring along sectoral lines. Now, I was just in France. That's right.
Jerry, one second. I'm on the phone right now with Jerry Tucker, one of the leaders of the New Directions movement and a commentator on the labor movement. You're on KPFK 90.7 FM. This is Voices from the Frontlines. I'm Eric Mann, with my co-host Manuel Criollo. And what we're discussing is the fight, first of all, at the elite levels of the AFL-CIO, and secondly, what could be an alternative. And Jerry, if it's okay, I still want to get back to, here's where I'm coming from.
Can I mention one thing, Eric, that I think
Jerry,
is critical to this? We look at the question that's being raised, particularly by Andy Stern, about density, and I've heard that kicking around in his shop for a couple of years. But I just was in France. I actually delivered the paper that's been picked up here at Sorbonne in France, in Paris. And while I was there, they had a general strike, and it was an interesting, in fact, even somewhat inspiring activity. Over a million workers marched to the streets of Paris, and I marched with them while I was there. And even though I will describe it more as a modified general strike, not everything in the country was shut down. A lot of public services were shut down. This was an activity. The labor movement actually pushed and came out and worked at, and yet, and they got a million some workers through the streets of Paris, and yet the density of their unions is much less or even less than the U.S. In this country. So, you know, this question of density being a cure-all and sectoral structures, which I'm in favor of a certain degree of sectoralism. In other words, I'd like to see manufacturing workers be concentrated in against the capital on their side and service workers as well. But I don't think those are the only answers, and that's the point I wanted to make. Having been in France and seeing workers taking up the cause, fighting against some of the things and fighting on a social front with the left built in to that struggle, you can tell the difference. It's palpable.
And I don't disagree, Jerry. What I still want to go back to is that it's interesting. The two things we're going to discuss today is a mayoral election in Los Angeles where Manuel and I have views far to the left of the two candidates fighting, and we're still going to try to analyze, is there any relevance to this fight? You know, I mean, as we also go into all the different things that we wish the labor movement would do or that the candidates would do, I'm still trying to understand. I know John Wilhelm from the 60s, obviously. I know Andy Stern for a lot of years. As you're pointing out, let's just even say the word density. My understanding of what their proposal is not very profound, right? I mean, one, they're trying to reorganize unions to at least better line up with the corporations they're trying to fight. Is that correct?
That would appear to be their direction, yes.
Right, so that it used to be the UAW took on the entire auto industry, and as they point out, in the airline industry, you have the machinists, you have the flight attendants.
Yeah. And I don't have a real question about that. That's not what I think is missing in this debate.
Okay. So we would say that's a limited reform, but it's not something we would oppose. Then the second thing is this constant discussion of more money for organizing. I had a big struggle with a good friend of mine when Sweeney got in 10 years ago. Then he kept saying, we're going to spend more money on organizing. And I said, organizing for what? And he got very angry. Like, what do you mean organizing for what? You know, I mean, well, what's the program? What are you going to fight for? So it doesn't seem to me that, well, first of all, it seems like Sweeney won even that debate, that he is not going to agree to a higher percentage of people's dues going into a general organizing pot. Is that correct?
Well, I think that's what happened at the straw vote held in early March, but I'm not sure that there aren't going to be concessions made one way or the other on that as this goes along. But again, you know, we had that claim was Sweeney made that claim back when the New Voice was elected in 1995.
Right.
At the very same time, there was a struggle, a well-known struggle going on out in Decatur, Illinois, which John Sweeney promised all the resources of the AFL-CIO to help win, and had that struggle right in front of him, made commitments to the daily workers, and promptly, when he was asked by the president of that union, who was tired of paying out strike benefits to those workers who were locked out, promptly backed off and went the other way. You want to send a signal to workers in this country about organization, win a few struggles. That'll do a lot more than putting a whole bunch of money over into a new fund. Start knocking somebody down on the other side and watch how workers will begin to pick up, their ears will begin to perk up a little bit and show some strategic soundness in the way you go about these things. Step away from the subservience to the Democratic Party and be critical of the direction around, again, a new vision for this country, and watch and see if workers won't start self-activity. Well, that's my problem.
Well, we agree with that. I mean, during the Democratic convention, Andy Stern mumbled something almost off the record that he was sick of what Kerry was doing, that there was not one pro-labor, let alone progressive sentiment coming out of John Kerry, and then he was asked to basically shut up and repudiate his remarks, which, as I understand, he did. And so my question is, do any of them And why don't you explain the blocks better, because I don't still totally understand it. Is it CWA and HERU Unite and SEIU on one side?
No, actually, from what I understand, and you know, the Unite to Win side, or what was called the New Unity Partnership at one time, which has since been formally dissolved, is made up of the Carpenters, a non-affiliate of the AFL-CIO today, the laborers. The Teamsters now have joined in on this, on that side. Unite Here, along with SEIU.
Right.
And then you added at the last debate, or at least at the last council meeting, they added the UFCW and they added the UAW. Now, lined up on the other side are a lot of the old traditional unions. That includes the IAM, the steelworkers now. Steelworkers and the paperworkers are just merging now. So they'll be a rarefied industrial union. And the CWA has certainly been in the forefront of raising a different point of view. Now, I'm not sure that CWA's advocacy is exactly what John Sweeney's posture on all of this is, but I know that CWA has had a fairly outspoken leader in this matter with Cohen, their executive vice president. So, yeah, the group that's sort of the and I think the term reformer really stretches things a little bit here for my taste. It may well work within certain halls, but I don't see much about reform. I do see rearrangement, and I see wishful thinking, frankly. And I'm sad to say that I think if they get exactly what they want, it doesn't mean 10 years from now that it will show you a more dynamic labor movement built around social justice in this country necessarily.
So we've been on with Jerry Tucker, a longtime labor militant, activist, progressive, important article on ZNet magazine, U.S. Labor in Crisis. Jerry, how do we reach you, and how do people download the article that you wrote?
Well, actually, it was on Portside as well.
Good.
It's on Labor Notes' posting as well. And I can give several. I can be reached at jtuckernd@earthlink.net.
Okay.
That's my, of course, email, personal. And for those who want to try to reach me, they can in that way. To not reach me, but to access the article or the presentation, which was made at the Sorbonne, I think it can still be reached through Portside, but I would also say it's probably currently posted on the Labor Notes website as well, under part of the debate in the AFL-CIO. Now, Z Magazine's mechanism, I'm not exactly sure of.
Sounds good. We'll figure it out, Jerry. So right. You can get it through ZNet and through Labor Notes and through Jerry directly. Jerry, it's great to have you on the show. We didn't solve the problems of the labor movement.
Not.
But we'll have you on again, and thank you for the great role you've played in the labor movement your whole life.
Thanks, Eric. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Take care.
Take care.
So we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with David Bacon, who's going to talk about the other side of, or the same side of the AFL-CIO crisis. Let's take a short break. We'll see you soon.
Gente na água doce.